Welcome to the Lose Your Cravings podcast, taking a different approach to reducing your cravings once and for all with your host, Kisa Amaro, certified integrative health coach. Well, welcome back, my friends. I'm Kisa Amaro, and I help ambitious women manage their emotional eating without deprivation or complicated meal plans so they can show up fully in their life and their career. And today I have an amazing guest on the show today, and I have invited Christiana Schroeder to be on the podcast, and I had to like confirm she says her name much beautifully or way more beautifully, or I don't know, that's not a word. But yes, thank you so much for being here. Christiana is a food and health coach with 10 plus years of experience in leading wellness classes and a PhD in health economics. She is also the host of the Happy Healthy Hustle podcast, where people share their story, including their struggle and how they overcame it. And now I invited Christiana to be on the podcast because I wanted to share with you all some insights on eating disorders. I know that there are or maybe some gray lines between like having a distorted relationship with food and an eating disorder. So Christiana is going to really help clarify and explain what eating disorders are, you know, what the signs to look for, and how to approach healing an eating disorder, because it is different than just healing your relationship with food. So welcome to the show. Thank you for being with us. Can you tell us a little bit about you and your journey and kind of how you became doing what you're doing?
Thank you so much for having me here, Kisa. I'm really excited. And of course, I'm super excited to connect with the audience. This is an amazing podcast, and it's such an important topic, especially as we're kind of like moving through the year, becoming more aware about our body. It's really kind of important to tune in and see what's going on. So if you might hear that from my accent and also from this name, Christiana Schroeder, I'm actually born in Germany. That's where I grew up and spent a fair amount of my time. By now, I can actually say I've been living in the United States longer than more than half of my life. So I grew up there and essentially decided as I was nearly done with my bachelor's degree in foods and nutrition that I should take the opportunity to study abroad. I went abroad to the United States, where I earned a master's degree in economics. And then after that, went back to Germany, finished my master's degree in food economics, and then came back to the United States to earn my PhD. And I think that looking at that journey, that's, you know, seems like a very clear path right there. My life really wasn't like a straight line path at all. Like I was going through and I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I actually think that frequently, especially as women, we tend to think, oh my gosh, we have to graduate and maybe find a job, start a family or anything like that. And for me, that was never really exactly on the top of my mind. I actually searched for solutions because I struggled with digestive issues. And I think that's what brought me to my field of study, because I was growing up in Germany. And now when you think of Germany, what's maybe the first food that comes to your mind, Kisa?
Sausages? Bratwurst?
Not exactly the land of the easily digestive nutrition. Yeah. So you're thinking like heavy meals, the potatoes, the meat, not exactly on the light foods like the salads or the fruits and vegetables. And that's, you know, partially related to where Germany is located in the world, but it's also part of the culture. So I grew up in a culture that's very much emphasizing heavier meals, and my stomach is very sensitive. So I had to somewhat like find my own digestive path. And I think that's really what led me to what I studied. And it also led me to the United States and where I'm living right now. I'm living in California. I'm living actually in a part of California that we call the salad bowl of the United States. It's the central coast of California. And that's where most of the fruits and vegetables of the United States are actually grown. So I couldn't be happier where I'm at right now. And I found a diet that works perfectly fine with my body. And it actually, my digestive issues are now at a level to where I'm feeling I can manage them. And I go through weeks on end without any issues. And then there might be flare ups. But I also am going to share a little bit with you of digestive issues and leading into eating disorders and how those two are like a little bit muddled together.
Okay. Yeah. So why do people, because we want to dive into eating disorders, and this is like, you're the first guest that I've ever had on who is, we've ever talked about this. And I think it's such an important topic. So why do people develop eating disorders? Like, what is kind of like the cause, or maybe what triggers them?
This is actually a really great and very pertinent topic. So just last week, I had a guest on my own podcast, and it was a male guest, and I interviewed him, and he actually shared that he also had an eating disorder during his teenage years. So as we kind of like think of our body and how it grows up and adapts to eating certain foods, you are starting to realize certain foods agree with you and certain foods don't. And we, of course, are smart human beings. We then might actually start avoiding the food that lead to certain digestive issues. So this guest and I, we had completely the parallel path to where we started avoiding everything that led to stomach pain. And because you are becoming so focused on what you put in your body, this focus actually is exactly what leads to an eating disorder, because you tend to think a lot about what you put in your mouth. And this focus tends to turn a little bit into like nearly like an obsession, right? So you could nearly compare somebody that whenever they are nervous, they get out a cigarette and start, you know, smoking. So when you have an eating disorder, it's like a lot of your thoughts during the day tend to think about the food that you put in your body, what that food does to you, but also how you feel after eating. And maybe then becoming a little bit more of concerned about what that food does to your body in terms of the nutritional makeup of that food. How many calories, how much fat, how much sugar is in that food, and what is it going to do to your body? So it nearly is exactly a lead in with your body image, and that maybe you're not confident in your body. So frequently during teenage years, we are not super happy with how we look like. There might be acne. There might be this general, we're growing into an adult body. And so if you pair that with digestive issues, it is really that you're somewhat like, if you think of sitting in a train, you're like setting yourself up for struggling with digestive issues.
Okay. So it's like that being hyper-focused on what you're eating and just like being very aware of, you know, like how many calories am I eating? How many fat grams, how many carbohydrate grams, like counting the macros, counting the calories, but then also like how it feels in your body and like noticing like how you feel with the different foods. Is that what I'm hearing?
Right. Yeah. So it's somewhat, if you think about your body, mind, and soul, it's, you're trying to control what goes in your mouth, what it does to your body, and your mind starts thinking a lot about it. And your soul, you start to be unhappy whenever you put something in your body. So the whole focus, and a lot of it really, when you think about that, is really that typically when we eat something, it should lead to happiness. And in that particular case, it's nearly like the whole like happiness is completely switched off and it's dimmed. Yeah. There's only darkness. Whatever leads to like negative thoughts. And it's like this spiral to where all of a sudden you start thinking, maybe I shouldn't eat at all anymore. Because the not eating, you feel completely in charge and in control of it. And at that point, of course, because there's no calories coming in, you might actually think, well, maybe I should also burn more calories. So frequently the eating disorder is also paired with this over exercise ambition, to where you're like, all right, so there's no calories coming in. And if there are calories coming in, maybe I need to make sure that I'm burning the calories that are coming in. So frequently you see people overly focused on also other parts of their life. So one thing leads to the next, so to speak.
Wow. Yeah. Yes, definitely. And I definitely like that connection of the food intake and exercise, because I think we've been taught that it's, you know, calories in versus calories out, like what we take into our body versus what we burn. And so we kind of get obsessed about that. And we want to be very, if we, like you said, we don't like our body for some reason, like we don't like it, we don't, something we don't like about it, and so we want to change it. And so we're like, okay, well, if I just eat less and then exercise more, and then it becomes very obsessive, it sounds like.
Right. And I think that what tends to happen is that after a while, you tend to become like nearly dull to things that start to change in your body. So when I look back at pictures of myself during that time, I notice now that, of course, I didn't look healthy at all. But through the lens, when I looked in the mirror, I thought I looked better and better the less that I ate, which is, you know, completely not true. But I, when I now look at the pictures, I see, you know, my hair was really dull. I actually think that I looked rather ill and sick, of course, and I didn't look strong at all. I didn't look happy. I didn't have like a glow in my face, or my eyes looked actually sad instead of happy. So you're in a certain way looking at your life with like a certain lens. And that lens is something that becomes worse and worse the more that it goes on, because you're kind of like feeling you're in control and in your power, when in reality, really, you're starting to damage your body. So your body doesn't get the nutrients. So as I say, usually you start noticing that the hair, the fingernails, the skin, your period might stop, which happened for me as well. So certain signs that your body is giving you, but you're just ignoring it because you're feeling so powerful and in charge that you're like, whatever, I'm just going to keep going. And that really usually is a sign for help, right? When your body is telling you that, and that's really when you should seek out professional help, or maybe there is somebody in your family that you look for.
Okay. Yeah. And that's just, it's so powerful how it can just kind of like start as this, maybe there's this desire to like lose some weight, and then it starts to get obsessive, and then it starts to take over, and then you have almost this distorted way of looking at your body that like now you look back on it and you're like, oh, I did not look good. Yeah. My hair was not like unhealthy. My skin was unhealthy. My eyes looked sad. Like, yeah.
Yeah, and actually, I have a few pictures of myself, and I keep holding on to them as like a reminder not to let it happen again.
Oh, yeah, that is so important.
Like, it's actually good because it's nearly like a wound where you don't want to go down that same path. And it's good to remind yourself that that's how it was back then, because we tend to forget in our mind about it.
Right. We forget so easily, right?
It's just like children, you're like, well, no, it wasn't so bad. And then once you're, you know, you may be pregnant with your second child, or maybe with your third, and you're getting close to delivery, you're like, oh, that's how it was. I forgot.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah.
Yes.
So what are some different types of eating disorders?
So like the one that I really struggled is like the typical anorexia, where you're essentially just not consuming calories anymore. So the classic version of it is that you're basically limiting whatever calories come into your mouth. And then, of course, the other option would be that you start binge eating. I didn't really have that particular issue, but it could be that you're struggling with, you know, same issues, your body image, but the way that you control it is you eat a lot. And then maybe you're forcing yourself to vomit out the calories. So sometimes people, you see them eat a lot, and they go through these little cycles, eating a lot of calories, and then maybe finding bathroom and throwing up the calories that they consume. So that would be more bulimic than anorectic at that particular time.
Okay. So there's like binge and purge. Now, is there like...
It's a good description.
Yeah. Are there other ways to purge? So like we like eat a large amount of food, and then we're like, oh no, like this is not good for me, I need to get rid of this. Are there other ways to do that other than throwing up?
Yeah, it could also be, of course, that you purchase maybe any pills that might lead for the body to eliminate otherwise, right? So maybe you're buying some digestive pills, or actually I've had friends that started smoking because the smoking might lead to a lower body weight than before. Oh. So you might pick up like another addiction. Or maybe any type of pills that might maybe lead to like an extra fullness. So you're starting to maybe eliminate the food that you ate, maybe whether that's through diuretic pills or maybe that's you're taking elimination pills that you would, you know, anything that would maybe lead to like an increased digestion, so to speak. You're speeding up the process how the food crosses your body. Mm. So your food doesn't have enough time to really get digested and add the calories to your body, but it's just essentially getting flushed out, if you think about it this
way. Like a laxative of some sort.
Oh, for sure. Okay. Yeah, it could be a laxative, but it could be anything that's diuretic that's essentially just leading to not a normal way of digestion.
Okay. Okay. And then in regards to like binge eating, what would be considered, like, is there an amount of food that's like considered a binge?
I don't know whether there is like, you know, like a certain amount that you think, oh, like this is definitely the borderline between normal consumption and binge consumption. The way that I look at it is, if you think about your nutrition intake during the day, there should be like spikes of calorie intake that are distributed throughout the day. It's nearly, you know, like a little line that goes up and down. Mm-hmm. The binge is like when the line is basically at a base level and then comes a big spike and then that line drops again and there is a base level and a big spike and it drops down. So it's not really something that if you think of like, you're taking amounts of food and you're spreading them throughout the day, but it's rather just like the one time during the day and it's an excessive amount of calories, maybe even more than on average, which could be like 1200, 1500 calories. So it could be way more than that. And it could also be, of course, a meal that's not even composed of like the typical fruits, vegetables, proteins, but maybe it is just one particular type of food like cookies or anything like that.
Like because pizza.
You're so focused on not eating that all of a sudden that one particular food might be what you're really craving. And then you just eat a lot of it. Mm-hmm. And then halfway through, it might be that you're starting to feel bad again. And that's, you know, what might then flip to the other side to where maybe you are feeling the food needs to leave your body again.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. So how do we kind of define eating disorders? So how do eating disorders differ from, let's say, an eating issue? Like, I speak to women who struggle with emotional eating or cravings. And so like, they just like, it wouldn't necessarily be like a binge. I mean, maybe it is a binge. Maybe they would classify it as a binge, but it is like, I eat like 10 cookies. You know, and I like I'll try and eat really healthy during the day, but then I end up eating 10 cookies or, you know, like, so how do eating disorders differ from an eating issue, we'll say, or like a poor relationship with food?
So the way that you can think of it as, and I described that to you earlier with regard to the negative consequences on your body is you might have an issue to where maybe you eat a lot of cookies or ice cream or anything. You mentioned the pizza there earlier. The eating disorder is truly harmful to your body and having negative consequences on the way that your body should develop, which is why it's so difficult because it happens typically during teenage years when your body needs to develop healthy. And if you're in that particular time not taking care of yourself, it might lead to negative consequences later on. So actually I have a friend and she said that her body is probably damaged for the rest of her life because of the way that she didn't take care of it during her teenage years. Mm-hmm. And on the flip side, there's frequently eating disorders when you go through menopause as well, because your body changes, your hormones change, and you tend to maybe gain weight. Mm-hmm. So that makes you more aware about what you put in your body, and this over awareness then might switch back into an eating disorder as well. So focusing on the negative consequences is really maybe the, I would say the gray zone where you're crossing from, I have an issue and I like to eat ice cream, to I'm damaging my body. I'm a teenager that used to have that period. Now I don't have my period anymore. So that's maybe like a warning signal right there when you should seek out help.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, is that like the eating disorder, if you are struggling with an eating disorder, it can damage your body physically. It's harmful to your body. It impedes your development. It can affect you for the rest of your life, especially if you're going through this at like that teenage years, which that's when a lot of, people go through eating disorders or struggle with them. So it's like, say if you're bulimic, right, you're constantly throwing up, and so you have like that acid reflux going through your esophagus, your teeth. It can harm your teeth, your esophagus. If you're using diuretics, that's gonna, I'm assuming, affect your gut health and all, the good bacteria, all the balance in there. Yeah, if you're not eating enough calories, that's going to affect the development of like your organs and your skin and your hair. Like you experience, like your hair didn't look very good and you just didn't look healthy and your eyes were sad. So it's like that harm to your body, like that physical. Okay, yeah, that's very helpful. So what are some signs that someone may be struggling with an eating disorder? Whether it's like, how do I recognize it in myself, or maybe how do I recognize it in someone else?
That's a good question. So, what I always tell people is that the compliments that we tend to give to people, I always encourage people, let's not focus on saying, oh, you lost some weight and you look great. Because I think that frequently that's the approval that people really look for. And then they feel I need to keep going because I'm moving in the right direction, right? So maybe a warning signal could be that you all of a sudden notice that somebody is losing a lot of weight or seems to have lost a lot of weight. And that maybe that person doesn't seem quite themselves. So has lost a little bit of the spark in their life. And that spark is maybe the over focus because they're not really looking out at hobbies anymore. They seem to maybe think too much about how their body is performing when they don't eat, right? So sometimes the way that I nearly compare it to is like, you think about a marathon runner that's maybe very focused on running a marathon and taking care of themselves and running that marathon and performing. But with an eating disorder, it's like the marathon is never running. You're always setting another goal and another goal and another goal. And you never feel like you reach that goal weight. You always keep going. And it's like, no, that's not low enough. I need to maybe lose even more weight. And it's basically a moving target. So with somebody that wants to lose some weight, they frequently look exactly at that, at the numbers on the scale. And because I work a lot with females, particularly that want to lose weight, I always say, let's maybe get rid of that focus on numbers because it can be eating disorders. Let's not think of just like, I want to lose 5, 10, or 15 pounds. And in fact, I always encourage people, don't even think about the scale at all. And I know that's really hard because, of course, as soon as we go to a doctor's office, we have to step on a scale. And it is an important metric, but we should also think a little bit about actions that would lead to a weight loss. And maybe rather changing our life around and adding healthy actions that lead to weight loss instead of just only thinking about the food that leads to the weight loss.
Oh, definitely, for sure. And I think we're so socialized to focus on the scale and the number on the scale that it's so hard for like clients I work with to be like, you don't have to weigh yourself. But
No.
they want to, and they like are like, and so we have discussions about that, like what does that mean? Like what does that number on the scale mean? It's so powerful, because even if I'm like, you don't need to weigh yourself, they still want to, because that's their affirmation that they're succeeding. And so how do we get away from that and move away from like, the scale isn't necessarily like, we don't need that in order for you to be successful, right, in your goal. So I love that, like focusing on the habits versus the weight. I love that.
Yeah, and I always use this comparison of results goals and action goals. So, and a result goal would be, I want to lose 10 or 15 pounds, right? So you basically, I frequently hear that in the first question. So what's your wellness goal? I want to lose 10 pounds. All right. And then I say, okay, so what's your action getting you there? And then it's like, oh, well, I guess I could exercise, no, but eat healthier, blah, blah. And most people know this, of course, right?
Right.
But the way that you will actually get that weight loss is when your mindset shifts to an action goal. So saying I want to lose 10 to 15 pounds, rather say I'm going to start walking every single day. And maybe that could be tied to a number, to a length of time, or to a number of steps, because there's nothing wrong with that. You could just say, I want to walk every day 5,000 steps. Yay, you. And then in that moment, you're more thinking about the number that ties to the action than the number that actually changes how your body looks like. And then you might actually see weight loss, which is amazing. Because you're not only thinking about the weight loss, it's just more like a positive benefit of taking those 5,000 steps every day. So the action goal is truly what might actually help you to understand that this is what will need to change in your life. You need to start building a habit instead of just focusing about how do I look like when I look at myself in the mirror.
I love that. I love the action goals, and it's focused on, like, yes, building that habit. So, like, yeah, you have this goal, but how are we going to get there? What are the steps we're going to take? We're going to, like you said, like, we're going to go out for a walk. We're going to get 5K steps in a day, and just building that habit. And it's almost like the side effect is the weight loss, if that's your goal. And so, yeah, just really, it's all about building those sustainable habits and those, it's like the lifestyle change. So I love that. So as a parent, how can you help create or foster a healthy relationship with food with your child or your children?
So I think, and I mean, I'm quite honestly, because I'm openly sharing this year that I had some issues with food. I think step one is to actually share that with your family too. So what got me out of my eating disorder is that I met my husband. And actually he just accepted me the way that I was. He never really questioned whether I was eating or not eating. And I think because he didn't question it, I felt that it was kind of starting to become boring whether I was eating or not eating, because he truly didn't care. And sometimes you just do it for, I mean, I hate to say it, sometimes you just do it for effects, right? Because you try to get attention. And he was really just not going down that path. And then I all of a sudden realized, okay, so he will love me no matter what. And that's really the message that you have to send to your children too. I will love you no matter what. No matter how you look like, no matter what you put in your mouth, but you need to be happy. And that's something very important. So my children know that I struggle with food, and because they know it, and I'm very honest and authentic about it, that they understand that we will always have both angles of food at home. We have fruits and vegetables, and I asked them about it. Did you eat enough fruits and vegetables? But we also have cookies and ice cream at home. And I let them eat that without saying you only get cookies and ice cream if you do that. Because see, that thinking is exactly what makes food much more important than what it truly needs to be. You're like nearly using it as a control. And that control, again, might flip to an eating disorder, because you're starting to associate food with a reward, a reward that you can only get when you behave a certain way, right? So we don't really want to give food that much power, because I think if you're thinking about a balloon, that's really what eating disorder is. It's like a total overblown balloon. And you really need to take some of the air out and focus more on, all right, so why are we eating cookies right now? Oh, maybe because it's Valentine's Day or somebody's birthday, or maybe because we had some ingredients in the refrigerator and felt like making some cookies. So we're going to eat the cookies because we made them. Awesome. But you don't need to necessarily say we can only eat the cookies when we do that, because that puts so much emphasis and spotlight on that particular food that it leads to overthinking what it really does. So my rather focus on the cultural message that food delivers than on the food itself. And the getting together, the social part of the birthday party instead of eating cake, all right? Mm-hmm. And the fact that you're all sharing a meal and that you can talk during the meal about how your day went. And that maybe we all have likes and dislikes for certain foods, that we can also try new foods and maybe develop new likes and dislikes. And especially with children, I see this all the times where, especially when they're younger, they might like some things in the morning and not like them in the afternoon anymore. So what I enjoy with my children is that they essentially adopted a healthy way of figuring out, I like these foods, I don't like these foods. I understand that I can't eat ice cream for lunch. It needs to be something more substantial than that. But I also understand that we might grape ice cream later. And that's okay too. It's something where we have these different food groups, and it's nearly like in an interesting TV show. They kind of come up and they go away again and they appear. And some of them are like maybe more the main actors, but they're all there and none of them is good or bad. We basically got rid of these labels. None of them are the heroes and none of them are losers. They are all having a role in our little movie of things that we put in our body. But we want to make sure that we acknowledge them and we know that they are there. And we don't really want to say this is like going in the locked cabinet there because it's doing bad things for our body. Absolutely not, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it sounded like just like neutralizing food as far as it's neither good nor bad. We don't have like this idea of good and bad foods, just neutralizing food and also like not having food rules. Right. Mm-hmm. Rules around food as far as like, oh, you can only have ice cream if you X, you know, and not letting it be like a reward, so to speak. Yeah. So I think those are wonderful, wonderful suggestions as far as, you know, how can we promote, because I know many of the people who listen to this do have children. And it's like, well, if I've struggled with my relationship to food, how do I promote this, a healthy relationship to my kids? So yeah, I think those are wonderful suggestions.
The number one thing really as a parent is, and I can't emphasize this enough because I see this in so many people that work with me. The number one thing, if you want your children to eat healthy, you have to eat healthy yourself. You cannot say to your children, look, here are your plates. There's broccoli, whatever you load on there, right? Broccoli, potatoes, maybe another vegetable, carrots or something like that. You cannot say this is what you'll have to eat. And then you eat like, you know, fried chicken or something like that. It doesn't work this way. So you do essentially model, and you won't really, don't underestimate how much your children look at you as your role model, even though they might not really say this out loud. You're always going to be the role model. So if you eat crap, they're going to be eat crap. Yeah. If you basically put food away, or you maybe have a drawer in your desk and you open it up and you start, you know, eating chocolate during the day, you're probably going to do the same thing. So it's really, they're following your lead, and you need to set a good role model. And whether that's that, you know, hydration, whether that's eating fruits and vegetables, it's really important. And if you have trouble with food, then you have to acknowledge that too. But at the same time, you have to maybe turn your life around once you have children and start, you know, adopting some healthier rules, because it's truly something you're going to see in them. And you're looking into a mirror, they're going to pick up those habits then too.
Oh, definitely. And that was one of my motivations to kind of really figure out what was going on with my relationship to food, was having my daughter, because I knew like she is going to pick up everything from me. And so I want to have a healthy relationship with food, so she does, you know. So that was a huge motivator for me. So what are some resources for someone who is struggling with an eating disorder? Where, like, how can they seek out help? Where can they find help?
So what helped me was when I was doing my PhD, a very stressful time in my life, is I built a little triad of really a network, so to speak. So I saw a doctor and she basically looked at my blood work. She looked at my body and she really looked at me inside out, so to speak. I saw a nutritionist. And of course, I also saw a psychologist. So earlier I mentioned the body, mind, and soul angle. And that's really how you should seek out resources with regard to an eating disorder. It's not really just what goes in the body. So frequently thinking about just looking at it from the nutrition angle, there is something else that got derailed that could be the psychologist. But remember what I just talked about, when is an eating disorder more than just like obsession with food? Also, of course, that you maybe need to look at your body and see whether you already damaged anything, right? So I had this triad that worked together during my PhD. So the doctor, the nutritionist, and the psychologist. And that was really what helped me. Because I knew then that whatever would happen, that I would have that whole support system. It takes a village to really overcome it. And I think that having different angles and perspectives will really help, because it might just be that there is like one different way of saying you shouldn't do it, that all of a sudden it starts resonating with you. Oh, bless you.
Sorry.
And that's sometimes what it takes. That maybe like, you know, it's nearly like if you think about with your children, how you keep repeating the same thing over and over again. Don't stop repeating it, because it could just be that on the 591st time that all of a sudden it starts resonating with them, even though you start feeling like a broken record. Don't stop repeating it, because I think that it's something that maybe just comes off in a little bit of a different way. And then all of a sudden it starts resonating, and it helps if you see multiple people for that. And ideally for me, because I was in the PhD program, they actually exchanged notes and they were part of the health center right there. So that was also that they talked behind the scenes about me. So that helped a lot too, that they were forming a little union and they included me in their circle. And it felt like we're all like a team working to the same goal of getting me healthy, right?
Yeah. So they were in communication with each other, just so they were all on the same page as far as like how to support you and in the best way. So that's awesome. That is really wonderful. Yeah. I love that. I love that. Just like seeking out not just one medical professional, but like you said, the doctor, the nutritionist, the psychologist or therapist, and having those, like you said, mind, body, soul to help support that. So beautiful. So
yeah. And then of course, friends and family. I think that during my PhD, so I actually wrote my dissertation about obesity and how we can change our food choices to lead a healthier life. And what I really found was that if we hang out with people that have an unhealthy relationship to the food, which could be, you know, the binge eating, which could be just not choosing the right food. So maybe it's a very unbalanced diet, and that doesn't really create a harmony of fruits and vegetables and protein, then you're probably going to lead the same unhealthy lifestyle as well. So I would also encourage you, in addition to seeking out help, you of course have to seek help within yourself, and you have to think of like, well, what actually triggered all this? Maybe it's friends that I hang out with. Maybe it's people that I look on social media, because I'm starting to create this unhealthy image about myself because these people on social media are doing this too. So I'm actually very particular about whom I'm following on social media, because if I feel that there comes like this certain, I nearly want to say like jealousy or imposter syndrome, I need to force myself to unfollow them.
Or definitely. If I feel
that I have friends that start talking about food in that way, I know that I can't hang out with them either, because I was already sick. So I'm not going to fall back into this. So it's nearly like a little trigger warning that should go on. If you feel that, all of your accounts on social media are maybe like these people that count calories and what I ate in a day. I mean, who shares that stuff anyway? And who cares, right? Then don't follow these accounts, because we don't need to share on social media what we eat in a day, nor do we need to, you know, say 1200 calories could be broken up this way, because we don't need to count calories either, right? So that's essentially the other thing. You need to start searching about yourself and how you spend your time. Anything that you put in front of your eyes, social media, what you're looking at on TV, the books that you read, anything that you choose to consume that's not non-caloric is important too, that you need to start questioning that as well.
Yeah, I think that's so important. It's just creating that environment that's going to support you. And yes, I am very particular about who I follow on social media as well. Because yeah, I was definitely following people who I follow, you know, look at their accounts and I get like very self-judgmental about myself and like, oh, I'm not living up to this, or I'm not like, you know, so I'm like, no, this is not supportive of me. This is not creating happiness and joy in my life. So we don't need to follow them. So yeah, creating that environment that's going to support you. I love that. So how can listeners find out more about you? What do you have going on? What can you share with us where we can engage more with you?
Yeah, so my company is called Hello Happy Nest. And it's actually brilliant that we have this conversation, with the idea that you're creating a nest in your own body, but also in your environment that makes you happy, that you can say, hello, happy, you're right there. I'm inside and out. I'm feeling so much better. So you can look at my website, hellohappynest.com.
Okay.
And I also have a podcast that's called Happy Healthy Hustle.
Okay.
Because I am working as a full-time professor, but I'm striving for health and happiness. And I'm sharing different inspiring stories from other hustlers that might have overcome some struggles and how they got out of it. So I would encourage you to tune in. It's really engaging and it's really empowering to hear what some of these leaders have gone through in their lives.
Beautiful. I love podcasts that tell stories. I am not a storyteller, but I love listening to other people's stories. So beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. Well, head on over to HelloHappiness.com. Check out the Happy Healthy Hustle podcast. And thank you so much for being on the show, Christiana. I think it was very beneficial to our audience. The listeners are going to definitely get a lot of information out of this and just knowledge about like eating disorders in general and how to identify it and just, you know, kind of check themselves. So I think it's such an important message to send out there. And thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. And I might send you a freebie that you can share with the audience that.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Like a perfect little treat for, you know, increasing your self-love and maybe increasing the way that you can plan out a week, because sometimes that seems to be a struggle when you focus on one thing like food or maybe your body image. It's going to give you some ideas of what else you can do to maybe make you feel better without just focusing on food. So I will send that to you.
Awesome. We'll put that in the show notes. We'll put all your information in the show notes and everyone can check you out there.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye, y'all.